Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's Sunday afternoon. Let me see if I can do the Parsha today, which is being sponsored by our very good friends, the Fragers, especially Tzipora Frager, Tzipora Shavalsky Frager. It's for the yard site of her grandmother coming up in a few days in the beginning of Pesach. And also, here's a red letter news that Yoni Frager just got engaged. In fact, they're having divorce today. When I finish this, I'm going to hope to go. So it's Yoni and Leora Sonnenberg, both in Baltimore. Baltimore, that's very good. And that's really a big excitement because I remember when he was born. So Mazel Tov. And now pay tribute to the grandmother's Neshama Shavon Aliyah, that's Sara Bashmuel. So that'd be Rabbi Shavalsky's mother. That'd be Rabbi Shavalsky's mother. And I said, tell me something about her. And she sent me Gone with the Wind. Send me a long business. Which is all joking aside, this will make a very interesting book. Because it's a not exactly typical story, but somewhat typical story of the immigrants who came here to this country, but one of the few that stayed from. And basically, you're talking about Litvisha people from Smolowitz. She says that her mother's family and so forth, they were friends with the Kovner Rav. That's because the Dvar of Rome was in Smolowitz beforehand. And then we gave him in Kovner, so he knew everybody in the small town. And then they knew him in the big city. And this grandmother, Sarah, seems to have been a very learned person and from the Misnagdim. And this is typical. You know, let's put it this way. Her husband came to America because everybody wanted to come over here, make a parnasa and have freedom. He came just before the First World War. He was going to bring the family over. And guess what happened? The war intervened. And so they weren't able to come for many, many years, right? Because of the war. And the aftermath of the war, I told you many times, in Eastern Europe, the war lasted longer. And this is so typical. And Tzipora says, the women, the Yentas, back in Europe, they said, oh, your husband hasn't called for you because he probably got married again. That did happen, by the way. You know, he abandoned you. But it wasn't true. And after the war, after a whole bunch of adventures, which I'll tell you again, really should be in a kind of a book. make a good movie. They don't make movies about that anymore. Ended up reuniting with her husband in Baltimore, Maryland. He was a sheikhet, and she did all kind of work. It's interesting. You know, once upon a time, you went to the sheikhet. I mean, this country. Once upon a time, you went to the sheikhet, picked out a chicken. You know, the women would squeeze the charm in which chicken they want. And the sheikh was checked it. Then you have to take it home and get rid of all the feathers and this and that and the other and then cut it up. I remember my mother did that. And I'm not from the 18th century. But if you want to go high end, you pay. Her mother would pull off all the feathers. Make it a lot easier to kasher the chicken. Now remember they used to burn the things afterwards? Do you remember that? You know, the skin. Where the wings have been. It's another world. And they lived in Baltimore. And they made sure their son went to Ner Yisrael, one of the very first guys, early years of the yeshiva. And that's why he stayed from it. He became a big Talmid Chacham and all the rest of it. That's Tzipora's father. So I see over here he had a mother, the lady in whose memory we're talking. And a mother was inspiration to him. That's what it is. Not everybody had that. You see, if you wonder, now, by the way, there's no guarantee. You could have an inspirational parent and still turn out not from in America. No question about that. Because the undertow, the pull of the culture was extreme. That is true. But on the other hand, if it works out and you find inspiration in such a parent, that's a big help in staying on the derech, which not a lot of people did. I won't go into more because then I'll spend the whole time talking about her. But I do pay tribute to the few people, relatively few people, came over and stayed from all the way, and were able to pass it on to some of their children. And that's, unfortunately, that's the exception rather than the rule. But the neshama should have an aliyah. They don't need me to say it, but the neshama should have an aliyah, because she clearly was one of these tzedekah types. I never knew her, of course, but she was clearly one of these tzedekah types. All right. Remember what they say: there's three opinions in the Mechilta, I think. Why did the Jews get out early? One says because Ruby Yechlusin, because they had so many babies. One says Koshi Hashibud, because the Egyptians worked them hard. I said in the past, Rabbi Kiva says the Noshim Tzikonius, right? Noshim Tzikonius, which is the, which makes sense. And, of course, it's not surprising Rabbi Kiva would say it when you think who his wife was. So we depend on the Tzadekesis, on the Noshim Tzikonius, more than people, more than people realize. Anyway, without any further ado, let's take a look at Metzora, Parshas Metzora. So three Metzora is obviously about Tzaraas. Some other things also, but mainly about Tzaraas. Tzri is about how you get it, and Metzora is about how you get rid of it, how you become Tohar with these elaborate ceremonies that I've talked about in the past. Here's a question that comes up often, and that is, how come there's no Tzaraas anymore? No, it's how come it came and went? And, it was around the Bayis Rishon period. You find a couple of examples of people getting Tzaraas. I thought it wasn't the Bayis Sheni period, but then I'm thinking again, and I remember there's these Mishnahs somewhere. They talk about people who had Tzaraas, and they would tear off their limbs to go in the Beis HaMikdash to be able to get a carbon. Do you remember such a thing? It was like disgusting. You know, they nailed their bad limb to the wall and tore it off. Oof. But the point of the matter is there were Metzoras. So Tzaraas went out of business whenever it did, but certainly isn't around now and hasn't been, because we all know Tzaraas is not identical to leprosy. We just use that word. Especially the role of the Kohen in declaring somebody Metzora and coming again, not Metzora, Ois Metzora. So usually when you ask this question, which kids do in school? Usually the answer, as I recall, is, oh, we're not in the high madrega anymore. You can only have Tzaraas when people were in an exalted level. And, you had Beis HaMikdash and all that sort of thing. Then Tzaraas would reflect the refined spiritual atmosphere that even a slight deviation would result in some kind of leprous sort of punishment. I know that. I've heard that. And maybe it's true. How would I know? I don't think so, though. No, let's put it this way. To me, it's not a satisfying answer. Okay? Maybe I'm wrong. I don't claim to be right. But I just have an opinion, as I always say 100 times, I'm just sharing my opinion. And it seems to me, best as I can think about it this year, that the history of Tzaraas, as far as I can tell, seems to go along the following lines. Any punishment, especially divine punishment, like Tzaraas, which is an ace, any punishment is built around the idea that it's only going to apply to a few people, to Yechidim. You understand? If you make a law in such a way that everybody's violating the law, then the law goes in, either you make a mockery of the law has to be changed or something like that. We had that in this country with prohibition. Anybody who handles the booze is going to jail. Well, really, what if everybody in Baltimore, what if everybody in New York, what if everybody in New Jersey is on the booze or selling it or this, that, and the other? Which was the case. Certainly in many states. That was the case. So if everybody's, on the sauce, what are you going to do, arrest everybody? You understand? Doesn't make any sense. It doesn't work. Because there's not enough room in the jails anyway. That's obvious. And by the way, the Torah does even have jail. But in our modern society, we understand that when you have a law, it's got to be so designed properly that it applies to egregious acts on the part of Yechidim. One of the main problems we have in the United States today, not to be funny about it, the real problem is we don't have enough jail cells. It's plain and simple. Costs a lot of money to do it, and we don't have enough jail cells. And that's why where I live in Baltimore, all the rest of it, most people get away with a commit murder because the judge will say, well, no room in the jail anyway. Let's find them innocent or something like that. And I'm sure that's what it is across the country.
So in other words, the logistics of the penal system play an oversized role in terms of punishing or assigning guilt and punishment to perpetrators of crime. And the criminals know it. And it induces an entire attitude in this country, as you know, that, you know, let them get away with crime. I'm glad I don't live in California. I heard over there, you can almost go into a store and steal up to a certain amount of money before you call the cops. So, I mean, what is that? That's like, it's not Sodom. It's the opposite of Sodom. It's crazy. You see, it's a breakdown of law and order. It's a disintegration of the society. And when you have a disintegration of society, talking about bad news, because history always demonstrates that when regular societies start to fall apart, you get dictatorships. Because the dictator says like this, I will restore order to society no matter what it takes. And the public will go along with that, although the consequences are such, as you know, that, you know, once you get the law and order back, he doesn't give up his dictatorship. So it's really a problem, right? It's really a problem. Anyhow, when you have laws in the Torah, lo signo, lo tirzach, and all that stuff, so the idea of the penalties are that most people are going to listen to it because they'll be deterred by the penalties, right? You understand that this could happen if you do this and this and this. A rational person will not do it. You don't want the penalty. And the Taras, in my opinion, it was of the same order, because the idea generally was that the person, let's say, let's go with the pshat that the Taras is a punishment primarily for, what do you call it? Lashon Hara. So it seems to me one of two things. And I'm not clear on this. It's a little hard, but it's the only way it makes sense to me. What was going on in the time of Vayisrishon and, you know, Shoftim and all that? Was everybody gossiping and saying Lashon all the time? Then everybody would be hit with Saras. No? I mean, a whole lot of people. Now, I realize God can do whatever he wants, and he can withhold it from one person and give it to another, so I get it. But the whole point of the negative Saras is to act as a kind of a social deterrent. The Rambam says that in the Mishnah Torah, where he talks about the fact, remember, based on these two parshas, and I mentioned before, this last Rambam in Hilchos Tzaraas or somewhere over there, that you notice there's such a thing called the Tzaraas HaBayis, and the Tzaraas HaFurniture, and Tzaraas HaBegin, and Tzaraas HaGuf. And the idea is to warn you off, in the Rambam's way of understanding it, and others as well. I think he's getting it from Chazal. So let's say, for argument's sake, a person is talking Lashon Hara to a significant degree. All of a sudden, he starts to get stuff in the house, right? Now, if you're a homeowner, you don't want the house to be destroyed. So you say, I'm going to keep my big fat mouth shut from now on. I'm going to stop saying all the Lashon Hara. So mission accomplished. But what if he doesn't get it or stop? Well, he's so hooked on Lashon Hara that he continues to do it. The house will eventually be destroyed, as you know, after a whole elaborate series of rituals that are outlined in Parshas Matzora. You know, the Kohen shows up, tells people to leave the house, and all that stuff. But then, it'll hit your furniture, and it'll eventually hit your clothing. So how can a person continue to say Lashon Hara if it's like getting closer and closer to you? Something as horrible as Taras. But I'm wrong, because obviously it happened, right? Obviously it happened. As far as I know, as far as I can think sitting here, I don't know any case in the Tanakh of Taras HaBayis, or even Taras HaBeged. I know about Taras HaGuf, like I say, again, a Geichasi and Uzio, not many cases either. So it seems that it must have scared people, most people, into not saying Lashon Hara. In the Bible, we're told about a few unusual individuals who, as I mentioned the other day, were so stubborn and so perverse in their Lashon Hara-ism that, or whatever other sin they had, that even if they got the leprosy, they did not repent, because had they repented, the colors would have changed and the Kohen would have come and declared them Tohar. King Uzio, Gehazi, whoever else was there. There may be one or two other cases of Tsarasa I can't remember offhand. But they're not many. What about all these kings of Israel who were really bad news? Yoram ben Nevat and all the 20 kings of the north. Or the horrible, horrible kings of the south. Achaz, Menashe, what's the other one? The son of Menashe, Amon, and Yoyakim, and so forth. I mean, we had a whole cast of characters. And what they tell you in Tanakh isn't half of what they did based, if you go by the Gemara anyway, they go into real gruesome detail. These guys were sinners with a capital S. I don't remember anyone getting Tsaras, do you? Off the top of my head, what happened to Menashe? Did he get Tsaras? No, he ruled for 55 years. He had an episode where he was captured or something like that, but basically it was for 12 years. Or Achaz or any of these other guys. So what's Epis? That one king, Uzio, who was not a bad guy. As it goes, if you go through the kings of the Judah of the south, Uzio was on the front side. I understand that at a certain point, he tried to usurp the function of the Kohen God, or the Kohanim, and do the Ketores. I mean, I know the story like you do. But that's not who he was typically. So maybe because he was tzaddik, he got the tzaras. It doesn't make any sense. Any more than it makes sense that he never repented. Why would he go to the rest of his life, 16 years, in a leprosy? The way he's described in our parsha, if you act better, there's a purification which the tzaras will go away. You're not halachically tor until you undergo all those ceremonies with the blood and the thumbs and all that stuff with the birds. But you're on the way out. Right? You're on the way out. So the mashmos is that it must have worked and scared the heck out of people, which it's supposed to do. Therefore, you had a relatively limited number of Mitzrayim. Certainly a relatively limited number of people with Saras who got the full business, as opposed to just some of the warning signs and the coin. If things work out, the person gets scared and repents. So then you can say that the Saras is cured, so to speak, goes away. It's like a barometer of where you're holding morally. And since there's relatively few number of people, you could have the system go. But as time went on, right? And I don't know when this happened exactly. Meaning, did it happen in late Bais Rishon, during Bais Sheni? It's hard to... There are indications in both directions, as I just mentioned before. When people were more addicted to gossip, then the whole system crashed. Because it has to crash. If you say it's a death penalty for murder and everybody in the town, everyone, commits a murder, what are you going to do? Right? The Torah has one special case. Avir Nidachas, everybody in the town, you know, committed idolatry. But even that is very rare. It's a question whether it happened and so forth. Because you're going to kill out a whole town? Which is what the rules call for. So if the Taras was supposed to be having the Lashon Hara and things like that. And it got bigger and bigger, the Lashon Hara. Because what do we say? Bais Rishon was destroyed because the Gila Rai Shvicha Dama Vodazara. I get that. Gila Rai Shvicha Dama Vodazara. Those are three very distinct types of sins. Gila Rai is something that has to do with morality. Vodazara is what is bowing down to idols, believing in other gods. And Shvicha Dama is murder. Why did the Bais Sheni go down? Because of Sinas Chinam. How do you get Sinas Chinam? You know what I'm saying? How do you get Sinas Chinam? And remember, when they see Sinas Chinam, they don't only mean like two Beis Yaakov girls, you know, I don't like your dress. Sinas Chinam was civil war, where thousands of Jews killed other thousands of Jews. Right? Sinas Chinam. How do you get Sinas Chinam? It has to be preceded by a process of Lashon Hara. Same way I mentioned the other day, you can't enslave anybody unless first you demonize them by Yoreo, son of Mitzvah, by Yanuna. So same thing intra-Jewish, Jews among Jews. You can't have one group of Jews going work against the other group of Jews unless it's preceded by a demonization characterized within the in-group of what we call Lashon Hara. And it's always been there. Sometimes more, sometimes less. But I would say in general, as far as I can see, It got worse and worse. Nowadays, today, I'm speaking today, if you're honest about it, everybody's saying Lashon Hara. Right? After all the Chafetz Chaim books, and after all the, ladies programs and this and that, all of which are great. Anything that promotes a mitzvah is great. But how effective is it? You understand? It's like, remember Mrs. Bush said, like, just say no, don't take drugs. Just say no. So same thing, Lashon Hara, just say no. I mean, it's true. I get it. It's not false. It is true. But how effective is it? There's a few yechidim that never say Lashon Hara and this, and that, and the other. But even there, you have to distinguish. Because the truth of the matter is, even very few people say Lashon Hara about other Jews of different denominations and groups. You see, that's the problem. The laws of Lashon Hara, as I always say, are very exacting. A person really has to, like Chazer, the book's covered time a million times, to know the yeses and the noes. And it's very hard, to adhere to those rules. I mentioned this all yesterday in my shul. Suppose you say like this, according to Lashon Hara rules, suppose, somebody calls you up for a shidduch question. That's a major area of Lashon Hara. So you can say Lashon Hara, you say something bad about the person Litoelis. I get it. Okay, fine. So listen closely. They call me up about a boy. I happen to know the boy is a ganav and is also a molester. Let's say I know that. If I say both things, it's a Lashon Hara. I'm only supposed to say the amount that's necessary to warn the shidduch off. You get what I'm saying? So if I say he's a molester, I shouldn't say he's a ganav. Or vice versa, something like that. Anything to do more than necessary, can't say toelis anymore. That's a very hard standard. Seriously. Very hard standard. So with the shaduchim, it's a huge Lashon Hara situation. And the idea is even from pieces, say like this, yeah, but it's mutter there because of toelis. And second of all, once you have different types of Jews, so I can stigmatize the other kind of Jew as someone who's a Rasha, and therefore it's allowed, and perhaps even a mitzvah to say Lashon Hara about. Right? Is somebody going to tell me you shouldn't say Lashon Hara, for example, about Bibi? Is somebody going to tell me you shouldn't say Lashon Hara about a conservative rabbi? Is somebody tell me you shouldn't say Lashon Hara if you're Lubavitch or against a non-Lubavitch or a non-Lubavitch against Lubavitch? Or a Chassid against a Misnagdim, the Misnagdim against a Chassid? Or Ashkenaz against the Sephardim, or Sephardim against the Ashkenaz? And so on and so forth. Everybody said like this, from my group, in my little thing, I don't say Lashon Hara. I have a Chas V'Shalom. But against this group and that group and the other group and the other group, since they're not Shomer Shabbos or they're not this or they're not that, or they have weird isms, it's okay to say Lashon Hara. I've seen it myself 100 times. The firmest of the firmies, when it comes to certain subjects, oh, then Lashon Hara is okay. They wouldn't say it about this group, A, but they will say it about B. And one of the major technologies of the last several hundred years, it's all about Lashon Hara, if you want to be honest about it. First the newspapers and the printing press, down to now the internet. It's all about Lashon Hara. So, which person doesn't go on the news and watch some channel or another, or Yeshiva World even, or whatever you want, where it doesn't have something negative to say about somebody else who's Jewish? With the idea being, it's mutter. So what I'm saying is like this. Nobody's clean. Therefore, you don't have tzaras. Because everybody would be a mitzvah all the time. If everybody's holding by the tzaras, then it becomes an untenable situation. Because nobody stigmatizes a sinner. If everybody's a sinner, nobody's a sinner. And that's how it works. It's got to be that most people do the right thing. And a few do the wrong thing, and therefore they're stigmatized as such. But if everybody's doing the wrong thing, right, you can't do it anymore. That's been the problem with drugs in America. So many people under drugs. Yes, it's wrong. You go to jail, all the rest of it. In point of actual fact, the cities in America, the city governments, including Baltimore, they've been giving up. The cops, they're not going arresting anybody for taking, a drug. Maybe they go after the pushers, maybe. It's the suppliers. But the regular people are not doing it anymore. Because that's what they do all day long. So Tsaras, I think, reflects a very sad reality, which is, in the battle between the Torah on the one hand and Lashon Hara on the other, if you're honest about it, who's winning? You know what I'm saying? The fact that long, long ago, it seems to me, that Tsaras went into desuetude is not there. Means the Lashon Hara is winning over the Torah. Right? And indeed, if you think it through properly, if you know how to read the Torah, I think, if it says that in order to fight against Lashon Hara, you need something called Tsaras, you're telling me that it requires an act of God to stop this to some degree. That's very depressing. Because it requires an act of God. We don't have an act of God. Right? We don't have anything where somebody's publicly, you know, stigmatized. You look like you're real frum, you look like you're real tzaddik, but really you got tzaras. Therefore, behind everybody's back, you were talking with somebody else, Lashon Hara. Right? We don't have that. And so when you read these parshas, it seems to me, it's striking that they're talking about something that once existed, that doesn't exist today, of course. But the fact that it doesn't exist today, is that the sign we're in a higher madriga? Or is it that the Torah gave up? You know what I'm saying? At no point. The Torah gave up. They do say, in the Gemara, I forget where, that, you know, at a certain point they stopped donning Dini Nefashas and stopped donning Dini Gzelus, whatever it is, because they said so much of it around, it becomes, you know, pointless. Right? Becomes pointless. We have to have a different approach. And today, indeed, the approach is more modern. That's the whole Chofetz Chaim business. Trying to learn Hilchos Lashon Hara, the rest of it. But I'll tell you again, since there's no clarity on who's the in-group and who's the out-group, I think Lashon Hara is very alive and well. The only thing is, you don't, even if you're from, you don't say about your group, but you say about the other group. That's what the internet is. That's what the politics that rages in Israel is about. That rages in Israel. And the biggest learners and all the rest of it are super into Lashon Hara, as they hate us. You understand? So the fact that you don't have Tsaras today, is that a plus or it's a minus? It sounds to me more like it's a minus due to the social reality, the consequences of modern technology as well as modern social relations. Anyway, I think I've gone a little too far, but until I wanted to get across the practical side between Tazri and Mitzvah today, even though it's sobering. And again, I want to thank for Frager and the Frager family, the Schwalski family, and for sponsoring today. And it's really exciting that Yoni's getting the engagement today. And I hope Mir Seshen to make it myself there. And everybody should have, as simple as they should build a bias number, Yisrael Amen. That will be, of course, the best tribute to the grandmother. I mean, that's really what you want. Isn't that the truth? That's what you want.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidovidkatz.com.